2016 marks Between the Lines' 25th year on the air. As we celebrate our all-volunteer independent media project's anniversary, please consider subscribing to our podcasts and supporting our work. Visit our website at btlonline.org, that's btlonline.org, for details on how to subscribe and make a contribution.
On June 23rd, the Colombian government, under President Juan Manuel Santos, and the leftist Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, led by Timo León Timochenko, reached an historic agreement on a bilateral ceasefire and the rebels' disarmament, which now clears the path toward the possible end of more than 50 years of civil war. Negotiations, which have been underway in Havana since 2012, with the Cuban government acting as a mediator, may conclude with a formal peace agreement signed on July 20th, Colombia's Independence Day. A final peace deal will require the approval of Colombian voters in a national referendum, which has not as yet been scheduled. There is concern that right-wing paramilitary groups, who are opposed to the peace accord and not part of the agreement, could foment violence that has the potential of destabilizing the hoped-for end of hostilities. Colombia's indigenous communities are unhappy that they had no input on the peace deal and are worried about the impact of post-war agricultural and extractive development projects in previous conflict zones. The Colombian conflict, one of the world's longest wars, began in 1964 and has cost the lives of an estimated 250,000 people, most of them civilians. During the course of the war, more than 6 million people have been forced to flee their homes. Your reporter spoke with Mario Murillo, professor in the Department of Radio, Television, and Film at Hofstra University, and author of the book, Colombia and the United States, War, Unrest, and Destabilization. Here, Professor Murillo assesses the significance of the agreement to end Colombia's five-decade-long civil war.
What took place was basically just about the culmination of a three-and-a-half, almost four-year process, peace process that had unfolded in Havana under the auspices of the Norwegian and, of course, hosted by the Cuban government between the FARC rebels, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, and the government of Juan Manuel Santos, the current president serving a second term as president of Colombia. And the peace process was very difficult. It was multi-layered, multifaceted. It had a five-point agenda. So essentially what we saw on Thursday was the signing of the final point, which was essentially the bilateral and definitive ceasefire, as they call it, the cessation of hostilities, which is eventually going to lead to the laying down of weapons and perhaps, hopefully, bringing the rebels into a kind of a political participatory process as opposed to being up in arms as they've been since 1964. So that's what was signed off on Thursday. And it closes the fifth substantial point that included a number of different elements or components, the first major one being the rural development, the development of rural or addressing the issue of rural poverty in Colombia, land reform, rural development, something that the FARC had been pointing out, obviously being a peasant-based rebel movement from the beginning, always drawing attention to the unequal distribution of land and the lack of development, the injustices that peasant communities in Colombia have faced for decades. And that was the first agreement that was reached back in 2013. And subsequent to that, they dealt with issues around transitional justice, not only for the FARC rebels who may have been implicated in human rights abuses and crimes against humanity, but also dealing with the armed forces and its security forces and the role that they played in carrying out massive violations of human rights of the civilian population. So that was another component of the agreement that was dealt with earlier. They dealt with the issues of victims' compensation, victims' rights, again, victims being from all sides of the conflict, not just the FARC. The fourth point was how to insert the FARC into a process of political participation, how are they going to be inserted and protected and defended against any kind of violent repercussion that we've seen in the past against rebels and others who have signed peace agreements in previous historical moments over the course of this long, long conflict. And then finally, the last part being the whole issue, the logistical and kind of the structural implementation of the ceasefire and then the demobilization of the FARC rebels. So certainly this was a major advance. People in Colombia are still kind of in disbelief that they've gotten to this point. After so many years of bloodshed and after so many doubters throughout the years, especially over the last few years, it's kind of unbelievable to see that they've gotten this far and that they're this much closer to putting an end, at least, to the violence between the FARC rebels and the government.
On land reform, the FARC guerrillas, as part of their mission all these years, has been to push for poverty eradication in the country of Colombia and to address the economic needs of the poor majority. How far do they get in these negotiations to move the nation of Colombia further towards this goal?
Well, this is a very complex question. So the negotiated model that was unfolding in 2012-13 around land reform, it has very progressive, a series of progressive points about redistribution of land, about the government buying land and distributing it equitably in the countryside, about development of rural infrastructure by giving tax credits to private enterprise to be able to build the infrastructure so that way the farming community, the peasant community, would have more access to markets, et cetera, by providing financial credits to small farmers, et cetera. So it looks really good on paper, but at the same time, we're talking about a complete detour further into the neoliberal economic model. And that's counter to the interests of the indigenous popular movements in Colombia. And it has led to considerable tensions between the Colombian government and the popular movements. And that's where the indigenous leadership and the Afro-Colombian leadership have been trying to insert themselves into this negotiation. Because what has happened is the government has informed them about what's going on, as opposed to having them participate directly in how these negotiations are going to impact their own territories and their own livelihoods. So it's a really complicated picture, and that's where I think one of the major dangers are in the future of this peace agreement, how that's going to unfold in the future.
That was Hofstra University professor, author, and journalist Mario Murillo, who's working on a new book focusing on Colombia's indigenous movement. Find more analysis and commentary on Colombia's peace negotiations by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.